You're listening to Wolves Potluck.
And hey, welcome to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Marvin Yue.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And we are here for our June 2025 mid-month book news check-in, where we go over the latest Asian American book and publishing news. As always, Books and Boba is supported in part by our listeners. So if you've been enjoying our podcast and want to become a big part of our book club, head on over to patreon.com/booksandboba. Where as an official Patreon supporter, you can gain access to our members-only Discord server. And if you join us at the Honey Boba level, you also gain access to our monthly bonus podcast, as well as the opportunity to help us pick a quarterly book club pick, which our next one is actually in July. So if you join now, you actually do have the opportunity to help us pick our next month's book club pick. Rira, how you doing?
Yeah.
It's.
I think that's a rhetorical question, considering all the news that have been happening in LA, as of like less than an hour ago, Senator Alex Padilla was forcibly removed from a DHS press conference and handcuffed. So really not that great. It's, I don't know how people with normal like 9-to-5 jobs are doing in this environment where like the world is literally on fire and you still have to clock in. Like, bravo to you guys, and I hope you guys are taking care of your mental health as much as possible.
It's especially like distressing because both you and I, we were live pretty close to where stuff's happening. So like,
yeah, you know, like ICE agents were staying at a hotel literally 5 minutes away from me, and they were like raiding my local H Mart and a lot of the local businesses here. Thankfully, the protesters here. I mean, I guess I'll dox myself, but like in like the Pasadena, Altadena area, like everyone's been very vocal and have worked really hard to kick them out of these hotels, but they keep coming back. So,
This
week is the No Kings protest. So I'll be there.
So, you know, in the face of all that's happening, we hope that this mid-month episode will leave you with a bit of hope as well, because, you know, even with the turn against diversity, books by Asians are still being greenlit, and you know, we still have a pretty, I think, relatively healthy pipeline in the near future at least. So there's at least that. It looks like publishing has not abandoned diversity as of yet.
I mean, okay, like I don't want to bring it down, but it's also like these deals were made like a year or 2 years before. So I don't know, we'll see, maybe in a year or two, if the BIPOC deals have dried up. I really hope not. And I don't think it will, because we do have a lot of imprints now that are headed by BIPOC directors. So yeah. All right. So we're going to move on to book deals. Our first book deal is Gallery One North American Rights at Auction to Storm Raven by Kelsey Yu. Pitched as a Rebecca-inspired modern gothic horror rooted in Chinese-American history, the book follows an ambitious artist who uncovers the chilling secrets of a haunted mansion on a private Pacific Northwest island with a whitewashed past. Publication is set for 2026. Ooh, Rebecca, that's one of my favorite books, so I'm down for it.
Can you give me the high-level description of what a Rebecca-inspired gothic horror is? Because I don't know what Rebecca is. I don't know.
Okay, so Rebecca is a novel by Daphne du Maurier, and there is a couple of movie adaptations. The most recent one was on Netflix with Lily James. So it's pretty much about this like ladies' maid, like this working class girl who's, you know, taking care of her boss at vacation, and she comes and she crosses paths with like a widowed, I wouldn't say millionaire, but he's like a widowed rich man, and he's titled, he has an estate and all that. And you know, they end up getting married, and when she moves into his estate, there are traces of, like, she seems to be unable to escape the shadow of his ex-wife, whose name is Rebecca. So, like there's like a mystery shrouded in like Rebecca, as in who was she as a person, and her death, because she like apparently died in like a boat, and people are like, that's a little sus, and she would never commit suicide. So yeah, it has like very, it's a very vibey book. Like, you feel goosebumps rise because it kind of reads like a ghost novel.
Oh.
Because you always feel the presence of Rebecca. But since Rebecca is dead, it's kind of like an ever-present ghost. And the main character is not named, so that's like also significant. I really love it. I really love the book. So
seems like a really cool like backbone to build a like Asian American Gothic horror around, because there are a lot of hidden histories that like we don't, you know, aren't recorded or aren't as well known because they're like, you know, histories of marginalized people. I just watched Sinners, so like I really got into like the Delta Chinese story, especially the film that Dolly Lee made. And it's just like, you know, these are stories that like they're part of our history and a part of our roots. But you know, it just feels like being Asian, being especially being Chinese American in that time, it probably felt like you were living in a horror story, right?
I mean, I feel like I'm living a horror story now in 2025, so I can only imagine.
Yeah, well, really excited to learn more about Stormraven, and congrats to Kelsey on the book deal. All right, next up, Kokola bought world rights to Mama's Christmas Gift, a picture book by APALA and Minnesota Book Award-winning author Kao Kyla Yang, which will also be illustrated by Jacqueline Tam. In the story about the spirit of giving, love, and joy, an economically disadvantaged Hmong family is able to celebrate Christmas when Mama comes home with gifts from a toy drive. Publication is planned for fall 2026.
Yay to more Hmong representation.
Yeah, and also like really cool that this story also illustrates the importance of things like toy drives to, you know, provide, you know, some Christmas joy to families who, you know, might not be able to afford to give their kids toys and gifts for the holidays. I know we have an Asian American toy drive that happens in Little Tokyo every year. And, you know, it's sometimes, I think like we've been seeing all around us, like when capitalism and institutions fail, you know, it's up to the community to come in and, you know, pick up the slack for better or worse, right?
Yeah, I know my local bookstore, they do like wishes on a tree. So kids will write down like what they would like for Christmas, and they hang up the ornament on a tree, and any customer can fulfill that wish if they want to. So
yeah,
that's like a different type of toy drive. But yeah, community really steps in when capitalism makes it very hard for parents to provide for their children. All right, next up, McElderry Books acquired Blood of Silver, the YA fantasy debut by Ali Nguyen. Pitched as Spirited Away meets One Dark Window, in which a Vietnamese teen from London is thrust into a magical realm where she must learn to wield a rare magic and uncover dark secrets about her deceased mother's royal past, while ravenous monsters seek to find their way in, and a charming prince might want more than just her heart. Publication is slated for fall 2026.
All right, I'm going to go on a limb here and say One Dark Window, dark romance, romantic fantasy? Like,
I've never heard of One Dark Window.
But it's definitely giving those vibes, right?
I try not to judge too much by the title, because it can literally be anything. I'm looking at it on Goodreads right now. It's a TikTok book, and I say TikTok book as in like it gained popularity through TikTok, and it is a dark, lush gothic fantasy about a maiden who must unleash a monster within to save her kingdom. So it's a romantasy, but I don't know how, I don't think it's categorized in dark romance.
But yeah, really cool to see how the story is based out of London. I know I read that Ali Nguyen is a London-based author as well. So, you know, there's just something about like English magic that's like
because of like Harry Potter, and it's just like, yeah, let's create more worlds, more yeah. magical worlds in London, so people stop reading turf books. And you know, I say that as someone who like is like a big Harry Potter fan, but you know, have had my childhood tainted by that yeah. lady. So yeah, yeah. Like
yeah.
if you like something, you like something. But obviously, you know,
some things don't age criticism. Well. You know, like
yeah, some things don't age well. But I'm glad that you mentioned that Ali is based in London, because I remember like someone in our Goodreads forums a while back. This was I think over a year ago, asked about any like Asian British authors, and I honestly could not recommend that many because I could not like think of any at the top of my head other than Zen Cho. So
yeah,
and now I have like Sangu Mandana, so it's just like my catalog is growing, but also like I need to find more Asian British authors.
Yeah definitely. It's been cool to kind of build our roster of, you know, Asian authors, and you know, have them on your show too, have them be a part of the Books and Bowl family. So hopefully we can have Ali's book on either as an author chat or a book club pick somewhere down the line. But really excited. Everything sounds cool. And I'm really interested in seeing like English magic from like a Vietnamese English perspective. So congrats, Ali, on the book deal. Okay, next up, Joy Revolution has acquired Worth a Shot by Dora Wang, creator of the comic series Pocket Peaches. In this debut YA contemporary romance graphic novel, high school mascot Ann Chen is content being anonymous, cheering on the girls' varsity ice hockey team, especially their star player Lisa, from the sidelines. But as she and Lisa get closer off the ice, Ann begins to wonder how long she can keep up her carefully constructed disguise and keep her growing crush a secret. Publication is slated for spring 2028.
I'm not a hockey fan, but I do love skating, and this is skating adjacent, and I feel like this is right up my alley.
Yeah, it sounds like a fun, like, sapphic, you know, coming of age rom-com, and love that it's a graphic novel as well. I love the idea of, like, I wonder if Lisa knows that Anne is the mascot, right? I think, is that there's some sort of, like, hidden identity thing going on here, like, getting a lot of, like, you know, really interested to see, like, which tropes Dora, like, plays on in this story.
Yeah I mean, it says like, but as she and Lisa gets closer off the ice, so I'm like, I don't know. In the beginning I thought like, oh, does Lisa become friends with the mascot, as in like in full costume, and like they like have very deep conversations, and it's like, okay, well, like this, I don't know who this mascot is, and it feels like very easy to just share my vulnerabilities with them, but it doesn't seem like it's going in that direction. So
I can see that, but I can also see that like she has like two very different relationships with Lisa, both as the mascot and as Anne herself. Yeah, I mean, rom-coms are all about that, like third act misunderstanding, breakup, and grand gesture. So I'm really interested to see, like, I hope it involves some sort of like hockey shenanigans. Maybe yeah. Zamboni.
I mean, it says it's a contemporary romance, so I don't know if it's actually a rom-com. It could be more dramatic. So who knows?
I don't know. The premise seems pretty, like the fact that a mascot is involved, like a mascot costume, screams like comedy to me, at least. Like some comedic aspects, right?
Oh, we'll see.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, Bloomsbury bought world rights to Lion Dancer's Lost Lettuce by Michelle Jing Chan, the author of Wei Wei's Winter Solstice, a Dong Zhi story. This picture book is a Lunar New Year tale in which a lion eager to bring luck and joy to Chinatown's parade loses his lettuce in a mishap and sets off through the city to retrieve it, only to discover that true fortune lies in community and resilience. Publication is set for fall 2026.
I feel like community and resilience has become a theme for this episode, because like this is like the third time we brought it up. In this podcast.
I don't know, like what is the significance of the lettuce?
Okay, I am not the right person to ask, because all I know about this whole tradition is a lettuce is involved. So like in the traditional lion dance, there's a part where like, you know, if they're at like a wedding or if they're at like an event, they go up to like a VIP, and the VIP puts a lettuce into the lion dancer's mouth. The lion dancer grabs the lettuce, rips it up as if the lion is eating it, and spits it out. And then I think in some events, they hand out a red envelope, but I think it's supposed to be you feed them the lettuce and then they like turn it into luck, I guess.
Oh, so it's like it's kind of like a magic show in a way.
Kind of.
Turning something into something else.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting.
Don't quote me on that, though. Like my as a second generation Chinese American, like child of immigrants, my knowledge of my cultural heritage and traditions is probably like not as deep as I want it to be, which is distressing because I'm hoping to pass these traditions on to my children. So I'm going to have to pick up this book to, like, you know, to reinforce these traditions or this heritage.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Next up, Simon & Schuster has acquired world rights to Leave It to Me, written by Katrina Moore and illustrated by Biva Nguyen. It is a picture book with an autumnal theme and an ecological message centered on a chipmunk who is determined to rake up all the leaves around her very neat forest home, only to realize that sometimes you need to leave things be. Publication is planned for summer 2027. Man, there's a lot of puns in this one.
Yeah, well, kids love puns, and so do dads.
I do love a good pun. This sounds pretty cool. I wonder if there's like some like composting message in there. It sounds like there's
say, like, you're supposed to leave the leaves out for a while so that it could like compost and have like bugs take like nutrients from it.
Yeah.
Instead of just like putting it in a bag and immediately throwing it out.
Yeah, so I'm sure that's part of the message. I wonder if this will be some sort of like ecological coach, maybe like an owl or like another squirrel to say, hey, my dude, let's not clean up all the leaves because the bugs need to eat, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't have OCD, but I definitely have like OCD traits. And when I was a kid, I was like definitely like when I lived in the East Coast, I would rake all the leaves. And I would be like, there has to be not a single leaf on our patio. Like, otherwise it's messy. We have to like get rid of everything. And then I would get so upset because like it's fall, right? So more leaves are falling from the trees. I'll be like, no, I just cleaned this up. So I can relate to the chipmunk in the story. We just want to have things tidy and all cleaned up. So yeah. All right, next up, Red Comet Press bought world rights to Fried Rice Surprise, written by Patricia Tanumi Harja and illustrated by Shaiho Pate. In this picture book, Fern discovers that the secret to success behind making her favorite dish for her friends is the wonderful combination of foods, cultures, and love that goes into it. Publication is set for spring 2027. So fried rice in Asian culture is like leftover food.
I mean, that's the thing, right? The secret to a really good fried rice is to use day-old rice. Like, you put the rice in the fridge, that lets the grains kind of separate a little bit. So when you fry it, they don't clump up.
Yeah, I've been seeing some real nonsense about like white people rice, like people not washing their rice, and people saying that like rice is unsafe. And I'm like, do you not like freeze your rice? Do you not store your rice properly?
I hear they also put butter in it, which sounds wild to me. I mean,
I've had butter in rice before. It's fine. It depends on the rice grain. So if it's like jasmine rice and it's longer grain, it's not a problem. But when it's short grain rice, I'm just like, what are you doing?
Is that like a southern thing or like, because I know like butter and grits is a thing that like is actually pretty good. But
I don't know if it's a southern thing. Yeah. But I don't even remember like how I came across that. But I mean, some people like don't like just leave their rice out, like don't put it in like a rice cooker, you know, like because like with a rice cooker, it keeps the temperature the same. So your rice is like is safe to like a safe temperature. But if you just put it in room temperature for hours and hours, of course it's going to go bad.
Yeah, stuff grows on that. It's going to turn green, maybe black. Not a good. Also, don't leave your rice in your rice cooker for that long either, because that also eventually goes bad. So
yeah, don't keep it for like over 48 hours, you know, like take that out and put it in the freezer and then reheat it.
This is your Books and Boba rice PSA for the week. But
listen, you can die from bad rice. Same thing with bad pasta. Okay, because I've read news articles of people who have passed away because they ate like room temperature pasta that's been like left out for days. And obviously the victims were like college students. So yeah, like please store your food properly.
I mean,
food hygiene.
That's just Darwinism at that point, right?
Some parents don't teach their kids about like food safety, or like the kids aren't curious enough to learn all that on YouTube before going to college. But fried rice is great leftover food. You know, like for Koreans, we like to put like kimchi and like seaweed and pretty much like anything that is left over in the fridge and just fry it up. It's great. Fried rice is great. I love it.
Yeah. You know, it's a great vehicle for a lot of different things. I know for me personally, I used to like putting ketchup in my fried rice. That used to be my go-to. Yeah. It's not an uncommon thing.
Did you have like an omelet on top though?
No, it's just ketchup mixed into the fried rice. I think specifically Chinese American kids did this.
Is this Heinz ketchup or is this nicer ketchup?
No, it's like just Heinz ketchup. Sometimes I would use McDonald's ketchup. Oh no. It's a
thing. You're telling me that butter in rice is like weird, but ketchup in rice is, I don't know. Like, I mean, I've ate omelet rice and then you put like ketchup on top of the omelet, but I feel like it seasons it differently. So I don't know.
Trust me, I've talked to a lot of friends and, you know, colleagues, and it's a surprisingly common thing to do. My wife used to do it too. So, you know. Anyways, just saying, I love this idea of like fried rice being a way to combine a lot of different cultures. I feel like fried rice is a very like, it's a staple among many cultures, but also a very easy way to just like kind of create a, for lack of a better term, fusion dish, right? Because, you know, it's kind of just, you just throw stuff you like in there and the rice binds all together and becomes delicious. Yeah, I don't think I've ever had like a terrible fried rice before.
Yeah, I haven't either. It's really hard to mess up fried rice.
You know, I guess we'll find out what kind of fried rice this fried rice surprise will be. But congrats to Patricia and Shiho on the book deal. All right, next up, Free Spirit bought world rights to More Than What I See by Miso Kwok, illustrated by Tai Mesquita. This picture book centers on the joyful, powerful perspective of a blind child as Maya shares her experiences, frustrations, and strengths. She celebrates who she is and pushes back against ableist assumptions with confidence and pride. Publication is slated for winter 2026.
This is great because it's teaching kids that ableism is bad. And I feel like there's a lot of misinformation about blind people because people think that you don't see anything at all and there's varying degrees of blindness. So there are some people who can only see like very blurred objects. There are people who pretty much can like see a little bit of depth perception, but like that's about it. So like blindness is also like a spectrum. And I feel like a lot of misunderstandings arise from people who don't really know that blind people can look different.
Yeah, I think, you know, we say this every time, like we talk about kids' books, but really like having more books to teach kids about different experiences outside of their own is always going to be a good thing because, you know, in a better world, you know, when kids come across someone who is different, I would love for them to be equipped with the ability to at least empathize or, you know, relate to the experiences of like their new friend because, you know, differences are the cause of like, I want to say most friction when you're like in school, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And also like, I feel like people don't give kids enough credit because at a younger age, they're not going to know. So it's just like, if your kid goes up to a blind person and you're like, why do you have a cane? And it's like, oh, I'm blind. I can't see. Oh, okay. And then there's like no further questions, you know, because they just like accept it as fact. It's just when the household kind of spews ableism in like everyday conversations that can really influence the kid's mind.
Yeah.
And we do not want to raise ableist human beings.
We do not.
We do not. All right. Next up, Abrams Acquired Kiri by Alice Chu, an early graphic novel series about the everyday adventures of an exuberant girl based on the popular webcomic in a 3-book deal at auction. Each book will have 3 short stories filled with slice of life humor. In the first, Kiri goes on a bird watching trip with dad, raises butterflies with mom, and creates a cozy camp inn on a rainy day. Publication is planned for spring 2027, fall 2027, and spring 2028.
Yeah, this looks really cute. It reminds me of when I was a kid, I had a ton of like comic book like anthologies of like, you know, Calvin Hobbes, Garfield. This looks like a much more, you know, chill slice of life version of that, but with a, you know, with a little girl.
I'm just looking at the art because this is my first time hearing about Kiri by Alice Chu. So yeah, the art style is very cute. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like the first book says that she goes on a bird watching trip and raises butterflies with her mom. And I'm like, I am not a nature girly. I would not like that. I would not like this. I would not have liked it as a kid either.
Yeah, 2027, my kids will be about 2.5, maybe too young to, you know, really read comics, but, you know, old enough for me to read these comics with them. So I'm looking forward to, yeah, excited to have, you know, something to share with my kids when they're a little bit older. So congrats to Alice on the book deal. All right, next up, Crown Acquired World Rights to The Quest for the Longest Noodle by Stephanie Tsai and illustrated by Sydney Woom. This picture book is about a boy in search for the longest, luckiest noodle for his great-grandmother's 100th birthday, celebrating tradition, community, and connection in all things that fill a long life with meaning. Publication is planned for spring 2027. Okay, so this is a tradition that I am familiar with because every year growing up, and you know, these days when I do remember it, birthday noodles is like a definite like Chinese traditional thing that we do, because you know, you want to eat noodles, long noodles for long life. It's kind of like the way the tradition goes.
Yeah, and you don't cut it for your kids because you're cutting their long life or potential long life. I did hear about this tradition and I was like, how with children though, it's a choking hazard, so how do they get around this? But you know, it's just like a traditional thing. I'm pretty sure parents are not that negligent of their kids when it comes to eating long noodles.
Also, Chinese noodles are a little more like softer. So I think it's like not as like, we don't serve our noodles al dente like the Italians do.
Or like thick, right?
Yeah.
Not like thick noodles. So yeah. All right. Next up, Eerdmans Bought World Rights to Hunger Fighter by Jacqueline Chio Lori and illustrated by Kristen Sora, a picture book biography of Maria Orosa, who fought against food shortages in the Philippines during World War II and is known for inventing banana ketchup. Publication is slated for spring 2027. Ketchup makes its way back into our our episode. Wow.
I gotta be honest, not the biggest fan of banana ketchup. I feel like ketchup is sweet enough as it is. I don't want like super sweet ketchup. But you know, that's also because I didn't grow up eating it. So don't come at me, my Filipino listeners.
I mean, it was probably created because, I mean, it says here, like, she fought against food shortages in the Philippines during World War II.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of Asian dishes, they come from scarcity and just innovation during colonialization and war.
I read somewhere, or someone posted, I don't know if it was you or someone on Instagram posted that, like, everything we consider Korean food is actually pretty recent. It's all food born out of necessity during, like, wartime, right?
I mean, we have a very long history of like cuisines. So I wouldn't say like recent Korean, like recently popularized Korean food is like new. Like tteokbokki, that's been around in like the royal courts. And the only thing that changed really was like the seasoning, because the gochujang, the red pepper paste, didn't come into play until later. But I digress. like budae-jjigae army stew is pretty much born from like the war, because they took whatever army rations were given to them and they just put it into a stew, and now restaurants serve it and it's considered kind of like a comfort food. I'm pretty sure it's the same thing with like spam, you know, like Asians like spam, we like putting it in our fried rice, and yeah. Well, and that's, it's just like that was not that, that's like modern invention.
Yeah, I mean, spam is an American invention, and you know, it was us that proliferated that to all the places that were like ravaged by war after like World War II, right? So that's how like kind of proliferated into the Asian cuisine.
Yeah. And a lot of like white people don't like spam. And I'm like, do you not cook your spam? Because that's how you make it taste good.
What?
I'm sorry. I'm dunking on white people so much. And like, I mean, different cultures, different ways we cook and season our food. So.
I feel like they don't cook their spam, though.
They don't, because, like, I do remember, like, spam musubi, mm-hmm. and, like, a lot of, like, white friends are like, why are you eating that? And I'm like, because it's delicious. Would you like some? And then when they try it, they're like, oh, wow, this is actually really good. Like, I didn't know that spam could be good. And it's like, yeah, because you cook it and you season it like food,
yeah,
like all food. Do you not season things?
Oh, well, you know, like we always say, it's always great to see children's books highlighting hidden histories, and, you know, teaching our kids that there are more heroes out there than the ones that we like focus on in school. So yeah, congrats to Jacqueline and Kristen on the book deal. All right, next up, Simon and Schuster has bought Oh My Affogato by Daphne Ong and Donna Gorbemper, a romp through the Amalfi Coast pitched as a love letter to 2000s rom-coms aimed at fans of Love and Gelato and Anna and the French Kiss, featuring a boy-crazy teen as she tries to plot her way into something real with her on-again, off-again situationship, only to realize that sometimes the best things in life, like love and vacations, can't be planned. Publication is set for summer 2026.
It is very much a 2000s rom-com.
Yeah, always love a good road trip. You know, like Euro Trip remains one of my favorite movies of that era. You know, and you know, there's something to be said about like letting your vacation take you where you might not have thought to go, right? I know this goes against your central ethos in planning vacations, Rira, but you know, sometimes you gotta just go with the flow, right?
No, I'm firmly against that. But yeah, like this does remind me of like Love and Gelato, and to like a certain extent, like Emily in Paris, you know, like people romanticize, you know, their lives in Europe or in foreign countries. And it's like, yeah, maybe I'll become a better self. Maybe I'll find the love of my life. You know, there's that like romanticization that really was big in the 2000s. So
yeah,
I feel like I know this is like a young adult book, but I feel like a lot of millennials in their 30s will probably enjoy it for the nostalgia
and or the 40s. Let's be honest, like I'm, you know, millennials are in their 40s now. You know, the oldest millennials are in their 40s now. So let's not forget us middle aged millennials. Yeah, congrats to Daphne and Donna. Looking forward to reading this next summer.
All right, next up, Knopf acquired at auction Planted, a picture book by Nina Mata, which takes the reader on a physical and emotional journey of an uprooted sapling that is removed from its pot and placed in the ground. Publication is scheduled for spring 2028. I am not a gardener. All plants die by my hands. But I have a friend who is like very big on gardening, and she's always propagating her plants, and she's like, would you like a plant baby? Would you like to grow a plant baby in your home? And I'm like, no, this child belongs in a more loving, caring family, because I will kill it.
Yeah, I mean, this sounds more like a conservation type of story. Like a sapling to me suggests tree saplings, so maybe this is about like reforesting, you know. And like we always say, it's always, you know, conservationism is going to be a huge part, especially in the next generation, because of the sheer toll that the previous generations have taken on the environment. So, you know, teaching our kids the importance of conservation of our like ecology is going to be even more important for them than for us, right?
Also, this could be read as like a metaphor of like, you know, like growing up, because it's like, you know, the sibling, not sibling, the sapling is removed from its pot. It's like, oh, it's like home that it's known for a very long time. And now it's out in the world and you have to like build roots and stuff. I might be going a little bit too deep into it.
It can be there can be layers. There's always more layers.
Like, there's only so much we can get, we can glean from these premises.
Yeah. Well, congrats to Nina on the book deal. Next up, FSG has bought in an exclusive submission, Today is Children's Day, by Aram Kim, a picture book about a sister and brother who learn about the Korean holiday Children's Day, which honors children, and then want to celebrate this special day with their parents. When a mishap occurs, the siblings learn the true value of family. Publication is slated for spring 2027.
I'm a bad Korean. I don't know what the traditions are of Children's Day. I do know the Japanese tradition of, like, its equivalence to Children's Day, which is, you know, like they have like those carp flags decorating everywhere. And I know there's like gifts given to children, but I don't know Korean Children's Day. I don't know the traditions.
I mean, I hope that the mishap isn't too serious, right? Like this sounds like a fun like book about learning about traditions and heritage, and I don't think this is the type of book where like something like terrible happens, right? So maybe they like spill something, or they like, you know, make a mess, right?
I mean my family never celebrated Children's Day. I never felt honored on Children's Day. It's just one of those holidays that kind of slips away from the diaspora because, you know, majority of the population doesn't celebrate it. So. All right. Next up, Lee and Lo Books acquired World Rights to the Shape of Love by Karen Zhao and illustrated by Corin Caro. Winner of the Lee and Lo Books New Voices Award, the picture book is an ode to Balikbayan boxes and how they help Filipino families share love and stay connected with each other. Publication is planned for fall 2026. So Balikbayan, it's like those really big boxes that they send back home, right?
Filled with like, if you've ever taken a trip to Asia, especially the Red Eye, you see a lot of these boxes I've seen a lot of these boxes because the flight I usually take to Taiwan connects to a flight to Vietnam. And I think a lot of Vietnamese families also do this practice where when they go back home, they bring a lot of stuff from the States and they pack it all in like these cardboard boxes that get checked into luggage. And from what I understand, the Filipino community has like there's kind of a mixed relationship with the act of like remittance, right? Of like working in the States to support your family back home. And we've read a lot of books that both celebrate but also criticize, you know, the effects this has on families. But it is a very common practice, and it is something that, you know, stems from this idea of like providing love by like, you know, sending your family gifts from where you are, right?
Yeah, I feel like every Asian family does this, but like in a smaller scale, you know? It's not like a big box. It's like maybe half a suitcase or a full suitcase of just goodies from your country.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like when I go to Korea, it's always like an exchange, you know? So this is reminding me that I need to send my nephews in Korea a box of Takis, because they were like, oh man, we don't have those in Korea. And I'm like, I'll get you those Takis, boys.
Like you send over those Trader Joe's tote bags and you bring back
tote bags. Right? They're always asking for stuff like I feel like a lot. I feel like I saw way more Koreans in Seoul wear those Trader Joe's tote bags than people here.
Like, I don't know if you've noticed, but like the Ajummas out here in like LA, they like trick their bags out too. There's like all these charms on it. They sew stuff on it. Like I've seen one grandma like sew a zipper onto her Trader Joe's tote bag. It's like it's a whole thing.
I mean, bag charms are a thing now. Like you see people hang their labubus and like their big keychains. It's kind of like what we had for cell phones back in our day, because it was like foldable phones, and people are just like personalizing their bags So I'm not surprised that, like an Ajumma would put charms on their Trader Joe's tote bag because that's just what the young people are doing.
All right. Next up, Rise and Penguin Workshop bought three Islamic-themed board books from visual artist, art director, and graphic designer Mustali Rosh. The books provide an introduction to Islamic culture and traditions through simple concepts centering young Muslim readers while inviting all to explore. The series launches in spring 2027 with Shaping Ramadan, which introduces basic shapes and traditional Islamic shapes through the visual language of Ramadan. Yeah, I feel like, yeah, I don't want to repeat myself, but again, great to see culturally specific books for young readers, right?
Yeah, I feel like our generation, we didn't really have that many picture books that explored our own culture. And, you know, like our parents didn't have the tools for that. So it's nice that, you know, like parents who are Muslim can just pick up these books for their babies because these are board books.
Yeah. I think the closest thing we had were like picture books that were like borderline, if not outright racist, right? Like, I don't know if you ever had like the Tiki Tiki Temple be a part of your like...
I mean, this is like I'm trying not to flex right now, but I like learned how to read by the time I was three. So I kind of skipped all of the like I skipped the picture book phase pretty much. Mm. And the picture books that I did read growing up were like Korean picture books that were actually in Korean. So,
yeah. Dodge the bullet there.
I don't know. Like, I feel like because I didn't grow up reading like Dr. Seuss or whatever, and like whatever picture books that people read at that age, like I feel like that is a cultural blind spot on my part. It's just like I've never heard of this. I'm sorry, not part of my American childhood.
You know, I think that's okay. Dr. Seuss also someone with a very history.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah, congrats to Mustali on the book deals.
All right, so our last book deal is Beaming Books bought world rights to Beneath the Same Round Moon, a picture book by Jasmine Fung, illustrated by Rong Pham and Vin Wen. The story captures the heart of family connection during the Mid-Autumn Mooncake Festival, celebrating the ways families can be together across the quiet weight of distance and time. Publication is slated for fall 2026. So this sounds like family that are long distance, you know, they're not in the same country and they're celebrating this holiday.
Long distance or, you know, multi-generational, maybe celebrating across, you know, generations, time and space. You know, every family has, you know, there's like the basic traditions of the holidays and also the family specific ones that like only your family does. So, yeah, sounds like a cool, you know, again, a great book for young readers to teach them about Mid-Autumn Festival, whether it's something that they practice with their family or something that their friends practice. And, you know, I think, I know I've said this before, but a lot of my knowledge of like Chinese holidays is stuff that my parents tell me to do during specific days, right? Like we just had the Duanwu Festival, which is the Dragon Boat Festival, which you're supposed to eat like the zongzi, the Chinese sticky rice wrapped in tea leaves. I think it's tea leaves. And all I know about this festival is it's when the Dragon Boat races are and we eat zongzi. Like it's usually revolves around food, right? I think Mid-Autumn Festival, I know it as the Mooncake Festival because we eat mooncakes and sometimes we play with lanterns.
Yeah, I mean like Asian holidays and how the diaspora celebrate it. There's like multitudes. there's really no right way to celebrate.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was our book deals. Congratulations to all the authors we mentioned. And if there are any books that I missed, like feel free to let us know through email or socials. So we're going to move on to news. And this might like this is how time is a flat circle, because these news weren't that like long ago. But it feels like it was like 2 months ago. This is how like time has distorted my brain. So do you remember, Marvin, when the Chicago Sun-Times published their syndicated summer reading list and it was just filled with fake titles generated by AI?
This was like a few weeks ago, right? This was like 2 or 3 weeks ago. It does feel like a lifetime ago because
it was like
going
the end
on,
of May.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember reading the story and then we did discuss a little bit on our Discord, but it's just like, it's okay. So why don't you take us through the story before I comment on it?
I mean, there's not much of a story to it. It's like 10 of the 15 books that were listed do not exist. And one of the books that one of the authors that was mentioned was Minjin Lee. And the fake title that they assigned was Nightshade Market, a story that follows three women whose paths intersect in an illegal night market. The novel examines class, gender, and the shadow economies beneath prosperous societies. And I'm like, what? Like,
yeah.
Illegal night market? Like, what?
So even on the surface, this does not sound like a book Minjin Lee would write.
I mean, she writes about books that examines like class and gender in patriarchal societies, yes, and you know, people who live in Korea, but also it's, I don't know, this book,
I mean, so
it,
like,
it just sounds so generic.
Okay,
and
prosperous societies
automated.
And the legal night market do not go together, right? Like, I would understand if it was like some sort of like, you know, high-end market or auction house or that type of thing, right? So even
or
on
like a red light district that's kind of hidden from the public.
And that's to say, this whole story just shows you that, remember when like publishers were like, oh yeah, we're going to use AI to help people write stories, but don't worry, there will still be editorial oversight.
We're not even getting editorial oversights on listicles.
I feel like this proved that is bullshit, right? They're just saying that, like, they weren't ever gonna, like, they're saying that because that's how you cover your ass. But this shows that, like, nobody fact checked the story, right? Because it
makes
simple...
me mad, because any book blogger would have done this for free. You know, it's not even like saving money at this point. It's it's just like, what? Like, just, I mean, I don't believe in paying people for exposure, but it's like, you could have found a human being who could have listed books for you.
Yeah. And like,
I think
someone
it's
put
really
their name
sad.
On this byline, right? Like, or is it like an editorial?
I don't
thing?
Remember seeing a byline. It's like one of those pages where it's just like, it lists out the books. So it might have been like a side story.
It's just such a wild story that, like, yeah, it's just, I mean, I don't think there's much like analysis going into it besides, yeah, it clearly shows the limitations of AI, that AI is willing to make stuff up, and that the people that were supposed to, you know, guard against false information making it into all like major news outlets aren't doing that. And like,
yeah. So like ChatGPT went down yesterday, and just seeing the difference between like friends who are like, I'm going by my life, like as normal, ChatGPT doesn't affect me because I'm an intelligent human being who can make my own decisions and do my own research and write my own emails. And then like randos who are like, oh my God, ChatGPT is down. How can I write my paper? Or how can I do my job? And it's like, you don't need it. You don't need it.
It's so,
we don't
like,
need this.
Yeah.
We do not need this summer reading list generated by a fake AI, like by AI. We did not need it.
It's just so depressing to know that like we're probably closer to the WALL-E future than we should be. Right? Like the future where the computers do everything for us. And it's like, that's not, I don't think that's a very fun way to live. Right?
Yeah. I mean, some people like shared the syndicated summer reading list to me and be like, haha, isn't this funny? And I'm like, no, it's not funny.
Terrifying.
I mean, now I can laugh at it because it's been like a couple weeks, but
I was like
mad as like a previous like freelance writer being like, oh, fuck, like you could have paid someone or paid someone nothing to come up with this list. It's lazy. Where's your editorial staff to overlook this? It's just, it was just a lot of rage.
I mean, you know where they are. They got laid off because they wanted to save money by using AI.
Well, now they have to hire like real human beings again, because this is unacceptable. All right, moving on. So I posted this on our Discord, and I mean, I guess it's funny, but sad. So this book talker was given two book deals despite having zero writing experience. He has no manuscript. So Atria acquired book talker, former rugby player, and a Bachelor contestant, Luke Bateman's debut fantasy series in a two-book deal, no manuscript. I wouldn't even call Luke Bateman like a book talker because he literally just like posted, he only has like a few videos. So he posted like one video that went super viral. It was just him being like, oh yeah, like I like reading. And then he like recommended a book. It was like very low effort, you know? And he accrued 100K followers within a week. And I'm like, that's insane. And of course, like this sparked conversation about like the barriers that BIPOC and women authors face in publishing. Like, you know, you're in the query trenches. You are trying to convince editors, agents that like their books are important. Like even though there are stories with Black characters, Asian characters, it's like, no, like just because my book has like Black and Asian characters doesn't mean that like we can't have more. So it's very infuriating that a cishet, a conventionally attractive white man got a two book deal with no manuscript. That is insane.
Yeah. We talked about this a little bit on last week's Boba chat, and like knowing now that this guy was a former Bachelor contestant, everything makes a little more sense. It doesn't make the story better, but like,
okay, but it's like having... I don't think it was the main Bachelor show. I think it was like Bachelor Australia or okay, whatever.
Then I don't know. I feel like this is just like proof that the systems that like we try to like, you know, that we've been trying to change through like narrative change, through proving that diversity stories are important, that they sell, that they're, you know, that they are just as viable as like, you know, traditionally published stories. All that effort, all that progress is like moot, right? We haven't really made much because this still happens where it's like, oh, here's someone with name recognition that has virality. It doesn't matter if his book is good or not. Because he has the following, his book will do the numbers. And that is more important than like building a pipeline of like diverse stories.
Yeah. I mean, I saw people making jokes being like, oh, it sounds like he has a concept of a story and not an actual story that you can outline. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds about right.
I mean, this is just like, this is kind of yellow face, but without, you know, the cultural appropriation, but kind of cultural appropriation because he's appropriating writing culture. Like, yeah,
writing culture.
Like, it'll be interesting. I mean, I'm not keen on following the story because, to be honest, I don't care. I'm probably not going to read this guy's book, but I would be curious to see like how long it takes him to write this book, because one of the things
they're probably
going
like, to get a ghostwriter at this point.
Yeah, or, that too. Like, yeah,
or
like,
use AI to write part of the book. I don't know. That's just like my forecast for his books.
Because, you know, a lot of people, their first books, they spent years, like they spent a lot of time working on it, refining it before even submitting. And like to get a book deal with no manuscript, meaning you're putting a deadline on yourself before you even start writing. So it's essentially like encountering the conditions of a sophomore book for your first book, right? That does not sound like a fun situation to be in.
Yeah. And a debut fantasy series.
Yeah.
I mean, fantasy is one of those harder genres when it comes to writing. So,
yeah, it makes me wonder if we'll be able to see like the telltale signs of like AI generation in his eventual story. Like, yeah, you know, are we going to see werewolves? Maybe. Are we going to see, you know, was it Omegaverse stuff?
Yeah.
it'll be interesting.
I do recommend people to listen to our interview with Susan Lee, the author of Romance Rivalry, because we did talk about this and how the bar is so much lower for male bookish influencers.
Yeah.
Compared to like women who have been in the space for so long and have like accrued, like have built their follower brick by brick, you know? Yeah, it was a pretty fun conversation. Go listen to it. Before we move on to the last piece of news, which is more of like a topic, but I saw this before we started recording. So I don't know who the poster is because people are just, kind of being vague. And pretty much this white writer was asking people on Threads, hey, so I want to write a rom-com about like the ICE raids. So like, can anybody point me to like resources or help me with like research? Like, how would I go about it? And she got freaking slammed in the quote posts and people, you know, like vaguely talking about it. And I was like, oh, I feel like every like 2 years, there's some kind of like oppressor and the oppressee.
Yeah, this is that like
romance novel
yeah. all over again, right?
Yeah, and it's like, why? Like, why would you think this is a good idea, especially in this climate? Like, that's your first idea of like, wow, people are being kidnapped off of the streets and families are being ripped apart. I can write a rom-com about this. It's just deranged.
Yeah, it's like your privilege is showing, right? That's what this is. It's like, you don't have to worry. Like, you can see the situation and say, oh, it's ripe for drama. But like, this happened to real people. Like, you should like, one,
also
not the right time, but B, never
research.
The right time, right? Like, this is like not something that you like, it's like, oh, let's write a Holocaust rom-com, right? It's like,
you will be very surprised at how many Nazi romances there are, you know, like books where like the romance interest is a Nazi soldier, but one of the good guys or like a soldier that doesn't know yet that of the gravity of like what he's doing.
Just and following just orders. Like, I think feel like that's
just like, I can't, yeah. I can't.
Oh, I did not.
But like,
did not need to know this part. This.
There's so many. And like, we just got to stop. All right. Like, please use some critical thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But moving on to like the last piece of news, which is more of like a discussion topic. So this one book talker, I'm going to leave her unnamed because they've like taken down their video. And, you know, I think it was like I think they've learned their lesson. But they claim that reading 20 books a year is overconsumption. And this obviously created a lot of backlash from the bookish communities. And what is it? One poster on Threads, Books and Bow, they said, in the era of books being banned by the government, we should be encouraging literacy, not shaming it. Get that free library card. Check out and read as many books as you can. Smash your local library summer reading program. Read banned books. And I think overconsumption. Okay. So there has been the trend on TikTok. There's been the trend on TikTok of like underconsumption to fight back on overconsumption. And overconsumption, like in social media, it's like people buying hauls, right? So we see this in the bookish community. We see people buying like 20 books in like one shopping spree. And, you know, a lot of the time that's fake. Let's just be honest about it. Like, those hauls are fake. They either already had those books on hand that were given to them by publishers, or, you know, they returned the books afterward. And I think there's a difference between reading 20 books a year versus like buying 20 books a year. I don't even think 20 books a year is like that big of a problem, but
yeah, I feel like we read 20 books a year easy on this podcast. Of course, we force ourselves to, but it's like,
let's see, we read about like four books a month.
I want to say I read about 2 to 3, maybe.
Okay, maybe it's just me.
You read more outside of this podcast, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So like four or five books a month. Like five is probably my max, but let's say like three books a month. So three books a month. There's 12 months in a year. That is 36 books in total. And we're only reading like slightly above the average, I think. I mean, according to Lectopedia, an average US reader consumes 12 books a year. But in the bookish community, I would say around 50 books a year is like a baseline.
Yeah. I feel like there's a couple things at play here, right? One is the fact that like, and again, this is like from anecdotal information, but like the kids just aren't reading as much. So 20 books might seem like a lot to them. Number two, probably like this person is using, you know, this viral term and trying to apply it to books, but like doing it in a very clunky way.
I feel like overconsumption is being oversimplified in this case. I think like reading 20 books a year is not going to impact like the greater good or like the planet all that much. I mean, sure, physical copies of books, it takes paper, it takes resources, but it's not like buying Shein clothes, you know? Like they're not going into landfills or I mean, I guess like maybe unsold books will like find a way into like mass destruction, but you know, that's neither here nor there. But it's like it's very different from like makeup overconsumption, clothing overconsumption. I think there is a conversation to be had with readers with high disposable income and who are like just buying a bunch of books in like these haul videos, and just like how maybe they're buying these books but not reading them at all, and maybe that's considered like overconsumption in this poster's mind. And it's like, okay, I can see where this thought kind of came from, but it is very clunky, and I feel like there's a lot more like sub conversations to be had.
Yeah.
And like, just so people know, like I rarely buy books these days, or like physical copies of books these days. Most of the books that I get are either like advanced copies from publishers, and books that are like not by Asian authors that I like to read. I borrow it from Libby. I listen to it on Spotify or Libro FM, where I have a monthly subscription. I don't spend a ton of money on books. And I think it's really important to be transparent about that, because a lot of people think that they have to like get the shiny special edition hardcover copies of really popular books in order to have like a pretty library. And I think libraries, good libraries, it takes time to build. So yeah, like I have a whole opinion on haul videos of booktubers, but yeah, I don't think it's overconsumption. That's my final thought.
I feel like at the end of the day, it's like I guess if you feel like you know, you want to save as much as you possibly can, like, you know, stick to ebooks, e-readers, you know. Go about your life in a way that makes you the most comfortable. But I think making a blanket statement like that, it's
also
never going to go
kind
well.
Of, right? It kind of reads like, oh, people who read 20 books a year are like they don't exist. Or like, that's just like being snobby. Yeah. And I'm like, actually, we could be snobbier. We read way more than 20 books a year. Like, sorry that you're unable to reach your reading goals.
If reading is your thing, then like 20 books a year is like, that's nothing. That's a drop, right? Like, I feel like...
And it's not a competition, I guess. But, like, I'm just saying, like, don't pretend that there aren't people out there who are better readers than you. And don't, like... I don't know. I mean, that does sound very snobby. But I'm just saying, just because you can't do it doesn't mean that there are people who can't read 20 books a year. So,
all right. Well, with that, that'll do it for our June mid-month book news check-in. As always, thank you so much for compiling our book news and publishing announcements. I guess before we go, can you please remind our listeners what book we are reading for book club this month?
Yeah, so we are reading my pick this month. We are reading After Parties, a short story collection by Anthony Viesna So. And it's a short story collection that explores the Cambodian American life in the Bay Area.
Yeah, so if you are a Patreon supporter, we are reading along on Discord. So make sure to check the Discord channel for our reading schedule. And if you're not on our Discord, feel free to leave your feedback on our Goodreads forums as well. We do try to include our listeners' feedback whenever possible in our book club discussions. So definitely let us know your thoughts on this short story collection. But yeah, with that, that'll do it for this episode of Books and Boba. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you all next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Books and Boba. This podcast was hosted by Marvin Yue and Ri Ryu and edited and produced by Marvin Yue. Follow the book club on Twitter and Instagram by going to @booksandboba and engage with us on Goodreads on our Goodreads group. You can also check out past episodes of the podcast by going to booksandboba.com and by subscribing to us on your favorite podcast app. Don't forget, you can support Books and Boba and Asian American authors by purchasing books at our bookshop.org account. Check out the link in our show notes and also at booksandboba.com. Books and Boba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts featuring unique voices and stories from the Asian diaspora. Learn more about the collective and check out our fellow Potluck shows by visiting the website podcastpotluck.com. Thanks for listening.
Podcast Asians in Baseball alongside Naomi Koh and Scott Okamoto. Asians in Baseball is exactly what it sounds like, a podcast about the Asian and Asian Native Hawaiian Pacific Islander Americans in Major League Baseball. Every week, we break down the highlights of what's going on with Asians in baseball and then take a deeper dive into the Asian and Asian Americans past and present who have shaped baseball as it is today. Whether you're Kim Eng's number one fan or you've never even heard of Hideo Nomo, we've got something for everyone. Especially for the Shohei Ohtani stands. Maybe too much for the Shohei Ohtani stands. Listen to Asians in Baseball wherever you get podcasts, part of the Potluck Podcast Collective.